Hey, dude, guess what tonight?
What?
Pool party, my house, 8 o'clock.
Welcome to Pool Party Radio. This is the podcast where we talk about the nicest Swedish men. I'm your host, Parker, joined as always by Jason, Razorblades, Cobra Commander Frisbee.
Hello.
How you doing this week, Mr. Frisbee? How are things going for you?
I'm going okay. My room surrounding me is in a huge state of disarray. Like, if you didn't know me anymore and you just saw my room, you might assume that I was, like, schizophrenic. Or really, really depressed. Like, there's just unfolded laundry on my bed, surrounded by crumpled up receipts, and then wires. Like, I don't know how I'm going to sleep tonight. Not like I'm not going to be able to fall asleep, it's just I'm not going to be able to sleep in this bed, because it's completely filled with stuff.
I thought that you meant, like, you wouldn't be able to go to sleep because you were so worried about those wires on your bed.
That's the thing, like, I'm not actually schizophrenic, I'm very sloppy today. But, yeah, otherwise, things are going all right. How about you? How have you been this past week?
Yeah, I've been doing all right. I watched all the Lord of the Rings movies in one day.
In one day?
Yeah, it was pretty exciting.
How did you take your breaks? Did you actually, like, leave to use restroom or eat during the movies? Or did you actually, like, power through each one?
Yeah, well, I think, we would pause it for, like, a few moments to go make some food and then rush back. So not too many breaks. Like, we powered through them all. Like, it took us... I don't know, from like 9 at night to 8 in the morning or something like that.
Really? Oh, so you did like an overnight marathon.
Everything I do is an overnight marathon. I don't sleep these normal human schedules.
You're a very sexual man, Parker.
But yeah, it was fun. The Two Towers was a lot more boring than I remember. And the ending of Return of the King was a lot shittier than I remember. Or maybe as shitty as I remember, actually. And I was shocked watching it again, like at how Gimli, like his whole character is just like he's like a fucking goofball. He's like the Snooki of the group. Like he's just doing some goofy shit and no one takes him seriously at all. Like in the book, he's like this hard-assed dude. But in the movie, he's something of a Dickie Roberts.
International porn star?
I don't know. He's kind of a jokester is what I mean.
Yeah, he's a goofball. I mean, even when he's trying to be serious, that's a total joke. I mean, maybe that's how dwarves are supposed to be, though. Like, maybe dwarves aren't really that serious if you were to meet one face-to-face. Like, they come off as a hard-ass, but then when you hear him say something like, "And my axe," you're like, "Oh, God, give it a rest, you weirdo. You weird little guy, I love you."
Yeah, well, I don't know. They added in, like, you know, like I said, like in the books, he's like a tough guy. But they added in all this stupid crap about, don't pull my beard. And, you're not allowed to toss a dwarf. And, like, all this, like, fucking wink at the camera bullshit.
Oh, the launch me stuff? Yeah. That's, like, there's a point where he's like, toss me. Toss me because I'm wee.
Yeah, yeah. But then in the one before that, he, like, refuses to get tossed, even in the face of death.
Yeah, because then he comes around to the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's his story arc, is he comes around to the idea of being tossed.
I'm trying to think of other characters that were rendered much sillier on screen than they were, like, in a book.
Well, Legolas also, too, to some extent. Like, there's a part... One of the reasons that I hated Return of the King when it first came out is there's that, like, Ninja Turtle goofball part where, like, Legolas slides down the tusk of an elephant. Like, he's riding a skateboard.
Really? I don't remember that part. I remember, like, he took a shield and rode that down some steps. I don't know if that happened in the books, because I never read them. Yeah. But that part was pretty cowabunga, I would have to say.
Well, that part
pretty
was...
radical.
Yeah, riding a shield is fine, but riding an elephant, that's absurd.
Yeah, I have no idea. I've never done either, so I can't really say which one's more ridiculous than the other.
But enough about those Lord of the Rings. It has begun, Frisbee. Things have begun. We're on an era and on a path that we cannot reverse. And by that, of course, I mean people are getting political on Facebook.
it is an election year, and we did see this coming. But yeah, let's talk about this for a second, because I am ready to halt my Facebook activities until the election's over. And by then, I'll probably be too old and crotchety to know what else Facebook has changed, like a timeline virtual feed in my retina or something like that.
Yeah, they just make it so you log into Facebook and download all the memories of your friends, so you can live through your friends vicariously in real time.
It's like a Total Recall moment.
Yeah, yeah. That trailer looks sweet, by the way. I was very against this remake. Well, not very against it, but I was vaguely against this remake until I saw the trailer.
You were vaguely against this remake?
Yeah, well, I was sort of against it in that Total Recall is like a perfect movie and there's no need to remake it. But also it's like based on a book. So I'm not going to fault anybody for just doing another version of the book in a different way. But I don't think that the makers of this, I became aware of the idea that the filmmakers of this new one had never read the book and had no intention of doing like a better version of the book. Like they're just remaking the movie with no source material added.
No one in LA reads anymore.
Yeah.
This is pretty well known fact. Like no one in that city is literate. At least anybody who works in production.
That's true. So yeah, so I was against it, vaguely against it because of that. But after seeing the trailer, it looks pretty sweet. But I'm always optimistic for trailers and then I get let down. So I'm trying not to let this one get to me.
To redact my earliest statement, we know our frequent guest, Jeremy Morrison, is an avid reader. He's a good guy. He lived in LA for a time. That's why I'm redacting that statement.
I don't know. I asked him if he read On the Road, and I don't think that he did.
That book, and I'm saying this as a person who used to carry that book around, is for boring hipsters.
That's true. I read it when I was like 19, and I was like, oh man, this book is pretty sweet. And I tried to read it again like a year ago, and I couldn't get into it at all. Like it sucks. I feel that it's very boring and the prose is very pretentious and annoying.
I think you have to look at it contextually sometimes. I like it.
But the idea, I just said the word prose on a podcast probably means that this is pretentious and annoying as well.
Yeah, it took a real pretentious turn there for a second. So let's get back to what you're talking about with Facebook.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've been predicting this. Not so much. I mean, it's not so much a prediction as an inevitability. But now that it is an election year, people are starting to get very agitated and very confrontational on Facebook about the elections. And 4 years ago when this happened, like there was like a lot of arguing about issues and stuff. But now I'm seeing that people on Facebook aren't arguing about issues at all. They're arguing over who knows more about the issues. I saw three different people this week post something on Facebook that was political. And then when somebody posted like a disagreement or something like that, or like a different viewpoint of opinion, they would just be like, hey, I know way more about this than you. You don't even want to step to this. You don't even want to have a discussion with me. Or like they would be like, I've read so much about this particular subject today that I don't even want to talk about it. Stuff like this. Like just, I mean, you know, we've often said on this show that, you know, if you're posting about politics on Facebook or on a social network, like you're not trying to like show people something, you know, like some new information that might make them vote one way or the other. Like you're just saying, hey, I'm smart. You know, I'm reading stuff, you know?
Yeah, you're posting in favor of your ego more than anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that this is that taken to the umpteenth degree where we're no longer even talking about issues. We're just talking about who knows most about the issues and how much you know about the issues.
Yeah, it's a very bizarre pissing contest. And I was going to add that not only people do the posting about just how much they know, but it's posting just to troll, basically, and rile people's blood up. Sometimes posts that are political in nature are just so blatantly idiotic and confrontational that it's just to elicit a response, and that's it. And the person who posts it kind of does it coyly. I mean, it's very much a troll face moment. It's like, this person's being an ass. And I've been very, very easily removing status feeds from my own line, just so I don't have to look at it.
Yeah.
Have you been doing that too? Like blocking people's posts and whatnot?
I did last election just because I was like sick of it. But this year I haven't been just because it gives me despair to read all this stuff. Like, I know more about this subject, so I don't even want to talk about it with somebody like you who knows nothing about the subject. Like, it gives me despair towards politics, and that's really what I want. I want to get so much despair about politics that I no longer care about them at all.
That's good. I think I might be actually at that point, so that's why I'm pretty easily... No, I'm not. No, never mind. I'm still censoring this stuff. Forget it. Yeah.
You'll get
that. But I like your idea, though. Just feeling your despair hump until you get so jaded by everything. You get like a... Whenever anybody starts talking politics, or you just happen across like a political section in the newspaper or online or on TV, that you just get a glazed expression on your face and you just turn your attention elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but sadly in this... I don't know, maybe not in this country, I guess. Maybe I shouldn't preface it like that. But like, it seems that like if you want to avoid politics and don't care about politics, you're really only left with like either sports or like the Real Housewives to fill your time. Like, there's not a whole lot of other options out there. So
what's wrong with the Real Housewives?
I've never watched it. I don't know. Maybe it's awesome.
I never have watched it either. Well, I watched like one or two, but I can't tell you where they're from because I thought there was just one Real Housewives. Turns out there's like dozens of Real Housewives.
Yeah,
they've got many different locations.
Yeah, by 2015, there will be a Real Housewives for every city in America.
Yeah, Dayton should be coming up soon. Tulare, not that far after.
But yeah, so one way, of course, like if you are going to hide people or block people on your Facebook, the easiest way to know if somebody is posting political things, like just to rile people up or to like stroke their own ego, is if like they posted the link and then they add, just throwing this out there or,
yeah,
or just saying.
Right. Yeah. We talked about this before though, a very similar topic, or it might be one and the same. I forget, where we talked about the nature of Facebook etiquette, where if you preface anything with that, you're not adding to the article, you're not adding to the debate or anything. It's just like, yeah, that pissing contest, the ego boost, the self-ego boost, self-righteousness that you're promoting.
Yeah, yeah. Or if you also preface it with, like, stay classy. Like, if Santorum says something hurtful towards, like, gay people, and then you post that link and post a stay classy Santorum or something like that, like, sarcastically, then you're also not adding anything.
Yeah, you had me up to the point, stay classy. Like, if you just want to post something, just post it. Like...
Yeah.
Glib remarks aren't really going to change the effect of that article or how you perceive that article.
Yeah. Like
we were talking about this with cities. I remember this now.
Yeah.
We were talking about like when people post articles about cities like stay classy, Mobile, Alabama. It's like, yeah, well, no shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they post
Mobile.
A story that's like Mobile, Alabama, you know, guy burns a truck because it's Japanese made. And then they post stay classy. It's like,
yeah,
just post the story and then let me read it. And then in my mind, make the stay classy joke or post like a 5,000 word essay about how you feel about the story. But if you just say something like stay classy or just saying, then you're not adding anything. And you're just, like you said, stroking your own ego.
I wonder if people feel like they're doing their own form of journalism when they post these different political articles and shit. Like they honestly do feel as if they're contributing something worthwhile to the Facebook audience.
Oh, yeah. I bet that's part of it. Like, I bet, like, one out of every 10 posts is somebody going, man, I'm going to post this. And that guy who, defends Mitt Romney, who's friends with me, man, he's going to change his ways if I post this. Oh, man. Oh, man. And that goes into ego as well, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, I see that in some of the posts where it's like, oh, man, his eyes are going to bleed. He's going to repent everything and commit Harry Caray for all of his views on whatever side he was on. For any of my friends who have a differing opinion, it's subtle, but I think it's there.
Yeah. And I mean, it's never going to happen. Like, people are, have recently, like, Penn Jillette and Kennedy, who I love, are like, on this big fix where, like, they're arguing, and Bill Maher, too, are arguing about whether or not atheism is a religion. But I think more so than that, politics is definitely a religion, because Facebook, like, you can go on Facebook and get like a billion different differing views than your own. And nobody's opinion ever changes on anything. Like, no matter what new information you get, like, much like, you know, you can be like, hey, a Christian dude, did you know that, people used to have tails, hence the tailbone. And they're like, whatever, creationism, whatever with you. I feel that people are like that with politics, too. Like, you could be like, hey, here's a new piece of information. Does this sway you one way or the other? And they're like, nope, no do, nope, creationism over here.
Yeah, I mean, especially when they're bringing up points on either side, or at least arguments against either side that go throughout, like, the last 50, 80 years. Like, oh, well, FDR, a Democrat. And it's, well, you won't really see Democrats doing the stuff that FDR did. Like, those multiple times of office that he had. And it's really hard to compare the politics of the far-reaching past to the politics of the present.
Well, even that, like, I mean, even... like, even stuff that's, like, quantifiable. Like, somebody would be like, I really enjoy X politician because they say X thing. And then you could be like, well, I just read the story about how they voted against X 3 years ago. And they're like, well, it doesn't matter. I still like them. I still like their conviction about X. And
even though I'm totally wrong about what I just said.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how to react to that kind of stuff anymore. I mean, I guess I just censor it out. Yeah. Self-censorship in my case. Probably should just continue looking at it and just realizing, like, oh, this is still bunk. I don't really care about any of this.
Yeah, the more I read people talking on Facebook about politics, the less I care about it. So hopefully I get down to 0% caring about politics at some point.
But you mentioned where else your attention will turn to, and you said sports.
The Huey Lewis album, Sports.
Right, obviously. I mean, we're talking about not just sports, but the entire spectrum of Huey Lewis.
Yeah, it's basically just like sports and reality TV. There are only two other bastions besides politics.
Mm-hmm. And I know that both of us, to different ranges and extents, like, I know I still try to get out some, but other than that, I would say that we're both kind of introverted people, like, on our own.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm kind of concerned where do we turn after we decide that we don't really have political views that agree with anyone, not even each other to different extents. Like, as we bring stuff up on the show, when we're doing this show, like, we tend to disagree rather than agree. But I don't think it's still anything that we would put ourselves in line with any major political party.
Yeah.
So where do we turn from there? Like, do we just become hermits? Because I don't know if I'm ready for that.
Yeah, I think that's the way that the best of us do. Your J.D. Salingers, your Ted Kaczynskis. We've got to start making bombs, Frisbee.
I wouldn't say Ted Kaczynski is the best of us. J.D. Salinger, however.
I just meant strictly beardly. I mean, he is the best of us out there. He's got a great beard.
His was the best around. That is a fact. It's amazing no whiskers got into any of those bombs. Although we'll never know.
He used his beard shavings as shrapnel.
This is very itchy shrapnel.
Ah, it itches so badly. Ah, it's on my tongue. Oh, no.
I'll never get that off.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, I like reality TV shows, so that's probably where I'll spend a lot of my time. Snooki's pregnant now. Situation's in rehab. Things are really heating up over there.
Situation's out of rehab now.
Yeah, yeah. Even better. The Pauly show is on. That's pretty
good. Have you watched any of that?
I watched the first episode. It was pretty good.
It looks pretty good. And you know how I feel about Jersey Shore people.
Yeah, I know how you feel about Pauly. He's your favorite one.
He is my favorite one. He's the only one I like.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're all probably okay people off camera. But yeah, even on camera, Pauly was like the one that it's like, oh, this guy's actually interesting.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. But I mean, even reality TV shows have been on a huge decline. Like ever since that, and I've talked about this before, but ever since that Ryan Jenkins, I think that was his name, Ryan Jenkins killed that hooker or whatever she was, or like stripper or something like that. They canceled all the good like Of Love shows. And man, that took away a large chunk of my soul.
Well, how many following stars and their families still have like reality TV shows? There was that Hogan Knows Best. I'm pretty sure it's off now, right?
Yeah, that's off. Hogan's going through a lot of stuff. That show would be really great right now. Now that like Hogan is Hogan's wife is having sex with that 17-year-old, and like Nick, Hogan killed that guy and stuff. Like, that show would be awesome if it was still on.
Yeah, it's totally nuts.
But yeah.
I mean, you could actually say that Hogan probably does know best now after everything that's been going on the past few months.
Yeah, he would have to know. He's got a lot of wisdom now that he's had just the most awful tragedies happen to him.
I actually, you know, I'm not a fan of reality TV shows, but I watched an episode of Gene Simmons' Family Jewels a couple months ago, and it was actually really entertaining, really good, really captivating. He and his wife, or fiance, or whatever. What's her name?
Shannon Tweed.
That's correct. Star
of the film Elektra, one of the best movies of the 90s.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that on Shelby Cobra's show, Logical Contraptions.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This sounds bizarre, really, that movie, Elektra.
Oh, it's good.
And what was the plot of that? She's trying to seduce her son or something?
Yeah, her son has, like, super DNA. He's, like, kind of a super soldier kind of a guy.
Mm-hmm.
A Captain America. And so, some villain brainwashes his mom into having sex with the son, because once he ejaculates into her, then she'll have all the superpowers. And then if she has sex with the supervillain, then the supervillain will have the powers.
There's something so disarming about the way you explain the plot of that movie. I can almost imagine that's how it was pitched in a way, but your method is so direct. Like, when you say ejaculating into, yeah, that's where I get like kind of taken aback. I'm like, oh, this is an actual film about whatever that is, incest.
Yeah, it's pretty
good. Superhero incest, super soldier incest. Really disarming.
That's also going to be the plot of The Avengers Part 2.
But yeah, the episode was actually quite good because Gene and Shannon go to some sort of couples retreat. And it sounds like a dumb idea, but they keep the cameras on, like, Gene and Shannon during, like, their involvement in these group activities with other couples. And they take it very seriously, or at least, like, for what it appears on camera, they're forced to take it more seriously than you probably expect for a reality TV show, in which case, like, most of it's kind of scripted or whatever. It's pretty wild, like, seeing Gene kind of lose it and get defensive about his mom and all that kind of stuff. And Shannon getting really worked up about it. It was actually a good episode, but I mean, I can't really speak for the entire series. So yeah, it's way more misses than hits for me. So I'm not going to be too fazed by the loss of reality TV or the downfall of it. I just don't know what else I'm going to do. Like, I don't play video games anymore. I think I'm too old to really like, I'm not really on the bandwagon for comics. Like, I don't get into comics that much. I'm going to say I'm too old for it. I know there's probably people out there who are really into comics and whatnot.
Patton Oswalt would be very discouraged to hear that you are too old for comics.
And so would Brian Posehn. And yeah, I know. But even music too. Like, I'm very lazy these days. I don't know how to like approach music anymore. That doesn't come off as too pretentious. Or, I don't know, too dull. Like, you can't listen to the radio.
Yeah.
Because there's not a lot of good stuff on it. Unless you have, like, Sirius and you can pick up, you know, different programs. I'm sure there's podcasts out there, but I just haven't sought them out because I'm very lazy.
Listen, if you want to find good podcasts, you got to go no further than the Red Band Network at redbandnetwork.com. This is a great network of alt comedy podcasts, underground comedy podcasts, Mr. Frisbee.
Alt comedy and underground comedy podcasts?
Yeah.
Can you tell me more?
I will tell you more. Man, they got such hot shows on there. Man, these shows are hot fire. You know what kind of shows we got on there?
No.
Man, you got Pool Party Radio on there for starters, son. You already like that because you're a part of it and or you're listening to this, listeners. There's also Pod Awful, hosted by Jesse P.S. This is a great show. I'm really into this show. This Jesse P.S., he's got just the worst girlfriend troubles in the world.
Jesse P.S. sounds familiar.
Yeah, he's a nice fella.
I think he runs that Red Band Radio, if I'm not mistaken.
Indeed. Indeed he does.
Tell me more about this Red Band Radio network.
There's also the Green Light Show and also the Ear Candy Show. The Ear Candy Network Show, actually.
I'm friends with those guys on Twitters.
Yeah, me too. The nice fellows. I've been getting into all these shows lately. The good shows. And I don't say that because Jesse P.S. pays me to. I say that because I've actually been listening to these shows, and they're all very funny, and they're all worth checking out. Especially for somebody like you, Mr. Frisbee, who listens to zero podcasts.
Yeah, that's true. I only listen to this one faithfully because, let's face it, I stroke my own ego when I'm not on Facebook.
Part of the Red Band Network. RedBandNetwork.com.
I know we feature music on this show sometimes, but it's mostly stuff that we grew up listening to. I mean, like last week we played Elastica Connection, which I don't think either of us had heard since probably 1997. And besides that, like, it's just stuff that we've have kind of entrenched in our pop culture minds. But I don't know how to seek out new music anymore. Like, I'm too old for it, I think. I don't work at, I'm not in college, and I'm not around people who particularly listen to, like, new up-and-coming music. So I don't know how to do that. And I can't really afford to do anything else. I mean, I could hike around in nature, but I don't really want to do that.
Yeah, nature is bullshit.
Yeah, there's supposed to be a lot more, like, Lyme disease ticks coming into Ohio anyway.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, why would I want to do that?
Yeah.
I want to end up, like, one of the people who has Lyme disease or thinks they have Lyme disease. I'm not sure which one it is.
You'll be like that broad from The Real World. Who got
that? Who was that?
She was from the Seattle one. I don't know. That season kind of sucked. Except for the fact that she had Lyme disease.
It was awesome that she had Lyme disease?
Well, that was the best part. She had Lyme disease and some guy slapped her.
Because she had Lyme disease?
Yeah, he hates Lyme disease, that guy.
And he hates people who carry it.
Yeah.
I follow you.
He hates hosts of parasites. But yeah, I feel the same way about music that you do. I gave up a few years ago and just realized that it's not getting any better than 1997. And that's where my musical tastes are going to stay. Like, I think that, you know, obviously writing about music soured me on music. And then also our college experience really soured me on music.
Yeah.
Because, like, a lot of the people that we, you know, we were around and stuff, like, we both worked at the radio station and stuff. Like, a lot of people around would, like, go head over heels for, like, whatever new band was happening at the time. You know, they'd be like, oh, my God, the Shins.
These Arcade Fires.
Arcade Fire, Rilo Kiley, my favorite. And then 6 months later, you're not talking about these bands. You know, like nobody's favorite band is still the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. And I think that, you know, if a band's going to be like your favorite band, no matter how long, you should be listening to them 10 years later. Like I listened to like every CD I had in 1996 or 1995 or whatever, like I still listen to, aside from The Clash. I think The Clash suck now. But every other band besides that, like I still listen to, and I couldn't, you know, it was just very confusing to me that even in the world of like indie rock and like college kids listening to music, like they treated music as disposably as top 40 stuff. Like some new band would come out and then you forget all about your last band, you know, like Lady Gaga comes out, you forget all about your Britney Spears. Like, and it was really disheartening to me. And I think that's what soured me on music forever.
I agree that the reactions were sometimes over the top for stuff that was just, you know, tossed away 6 months later. But the idea of being able to sample so much and be around so much different music with at least like some tinge of electricity or excitement kind of underlying the entire process, that's always a good way to experience new music. But like you said, I mean, if you're already sour to the entire thing, then what's the point of seeking it out? I don't think I'm necessarily sour to it myself, but I do know where you're coming from. And I think when I reflect on that, I don't get so much soured as I just get more lazy thoughts. Like I don't see myself getting that excited about much of anything anymore, which sounds really depressing, but you know, it's just laziness talking. Like I don't really want to put forth the effort. You know what I'm doing instead, actually, now I think about it?
What's that?
Working out. Like I'm trying to work out with a friend.
I saw that picture of you on Facebook with the big beefy arms.
And the giant beard?
Yeah.
I think that might be photoshooped. I'm not sure.
Nope. It's real.
That's from a very hefty weightlifting session. It was just one arm, really. But anyway, there's that and not really a whole lot else. Just reading, I think.
Yeah, I got into working out and stuff like the last 2 years I was in Dayton. Like I was like super into it and going all the time and stuff. And, like, now that I don't work out, like, I feel that the working out like has really ruined my body. Like sort of like how if you were to buy like a Ferrari, or like if you had like a really old Ferrari and you're like, all right, let's take this Ferrari out to the desert and drive it like 200 miles an hour and we'll see how it goes. Like that would like ruin your car, you know? Like just the fact that you're putting that much into a car that, you know, is like super old and hasn't been driven in like 5 or 10 years or whatever. Like that, yeah. I feel about my body now. Like if I would have just stayed lazy and like not moved my entire life, I could have lived to the age of 105. But now that my body has tasted what it's like to be active and like work out, like now it is deteriorating. Sort of like that time in Lord of the Rings where the one ring prolonged Bilbo's life because he had it, you know? And he became somewhat immortal, you know? He was, living way past his years and looking really young. And then the moment he took it off and gave it to Frodo, like he started to age rapidly and he died within like a couple of years. Like that's how I feel.
You felt like you've taken off the ring or you've left the ring out of your possession.
Yeah. Like now that my body knows what working out and activity is, like it's not right. Getting it now because all I do is like sit around and read and play video games.
Yeah.
Like it's just making my body deteriorate at a rapid pace. And I'll be dead right after Frodo throws the ring in Mount Doom, and then we're going to hang out. We're going to get together with the elves, and then we're going to sail west. Actually, I did sail west. I'm dead already.
You're dead to me. This is a ghostly apparition that I'm talking to.
Yeah, according to Tolkien, I have sailed west, and I am dead.
See, yeah, and that's a weird thing, too, by the way. Like, the Tolkien illusion of sailing west meaning you're dead. Like, what's he trying to say? It's kind of disparate if you take it into real world terms. But I know he's talking about Middle Earth or whatever.
Yeah. Also, I think he was like really against Manifest Destiny, being a Brit.
I think so. But anyway, aside from that, yeah, I hate the idea of feeling like that you or I are becoming boring, like people. Like, I feel like we can still be fun and whatnot. But when it comes down to like, you know, developing new interests, I don't know. I'm not that confident in it. And part of it, again, is just the fact that, like, I'm making an effort to not be pretentious. And what's funny about this is I just met this this friend of a friend who moved here from San Francisco. And we were talking, me and this person who's from Dayton, she and I were talking about, like, you know, how people in Dayton are kind of pretentious, or, like, certain folks are pretentious sometimes. And he pops in. This guy from San Fran, he's like, you know what? I never actually heard the term pretentious until I moved to Dayton. What is it with people from Dayton, like, using the term pretentious so much? Like, do you feel like people are that inferior to you, or what is it? And you know what I thought when he mentioned that? What a pretentious thing to say.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so from that example alone, like, I know I'm just making an effort to not be pretentious when, really, when you take up any interest, you run that risk anyway. Like, I think, you know, what we're doing is that we're edging ourselves, or at least I'm edging myself, closer and closer to hermitdom. Like, I'm going to be a hermit because I'm not going to want to try anything because I feel like I'm going to be pretentious. I'm going to be like J.D. Salinger in that regard. I mean, more like a Holden Caulfield. Where I'm going to become a phony or something.
Yeah, that's understandable. And I mean, like, there's that fear a lot. Like, whenever you get into something new, for some reason, even in our old age, like, there's always the fear that somebody will label you a phony. Like, anytime I, like, think about, you know, maybe getting into something new, like, you know, or, like, anytime I, like, start researching something, you know, on the internet, like, oh, this is something that seems all right. Like, people are always going to label you, like, a Johnny Come Lately, you know, and be like, oh, well, you clearly can't be into such and such thing because you're getting into it in 2012. It's far too late. You know, stuff like
yeah,
that. That still happens. Like, that's something that I thought would be over in high school, but.
No, it's a lifetime struggle. You mentioned this when we were talking about the albums that we got into during our 50th episode. You were talking about, like, getting into different styles of music and going on message boards, even. So, like, oh, I like this band. I think you mentioned, like, Green Day or something. So like, no, it's not real punk. You guys in the real punk.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, you're right. You're going to get that whatever you do. Like, even if you go the nerdy route, like, you get really into tech stuff. You know, you're going to really like Windows or Snow Leopard, and somebody comes out with Linux. And like, oh, I have to deal with this guy now.
I can't believe you're not into the computers that need a floppy disk to start. You're a poser.
Exactly. That would be awesome to meet a hipster Tiki who's just really into like using Commodore 64s for everything.
Oh, I'm sure it will happen. I'm absolutely sure it will happen.
Some idiot using like Logo Writer to write all of his letters, like on a green and black screen.
Yeah, I'm absolutely sure that's happening.
I'm making a banner for my party with this awkwardly slow moving turtle graphic.
Yeah. Well, there was this kid I knew when we were in college that would always take it or like his typewriter around campus, you know, and like write on his typewriter, you know, and that's basically like that. I mean, there's like 8 computer labs on campus. There's free Wi-Fi. Like, you don't need a typewriter, bro. Come on.
Yeah, it's total bullshit. Like, who's going to take your manuscript?
I know.
Yeah. I mean, at that time, you had been like writing for local paper anyway, right?
Yeah.
The city paper.
Yeah.
And all you'd have to do is just run to, you know, the Microsoft Word program on any available computer, hit send after typing for about 30 to an hour, and you've got your email to the editor's desk or whatever. I don't know how it works. I've never actually worked in publishing. But you get the idea, right? Was that close?
Yeah. If I would have like typed my stuff out on like actual paper and mailed it in, my editor would have laughed at me.
Yeah. But this kid, yeah, he's presenting the aesthetic that he does not give a shit about any new technology that he's paying for, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, he was like putting it out there that, you know, if you write on a laptop, you're somehow less than, you know, authentic as a writer or something like that.
So bogus.
Yeah. But
you know who else had a typewriter?
Who's that? Chase?
Chase.
Yeah. Oh, that guy.
And truth be told, I had one for about a week.
Yeah.
But I realized how cumbersome it was and how annoying it looked, so I got rid of it.
Yeah. But to go back to the Johnny-come-lately stuff, I am guilty of it myself, as I find that anybody whose first Fallout game is Fallout 3 is a total poser.
You got to start from one or none, right?
Yeah, man. I played one all throughout high school.
You know who else played one?
Who's that?
Chase.
Yeah, we played it together while reading excerpts from...
On the road to each other?
Yeah. Well, I was trying to go with a more underground Jack Kerouac book, but I couldn't think of any. Franny and Zoe. Is that one?
That's not Jack Kerouac. That's Salinger. You're throwing that Salinger kick. You mean to say Subterraneans or
what was
Desolation
it?
Angels.
The Naked Lunch? There, is that?
That's Burroughs.
Oh, yeah, The Last Exit to Brooklyn. That's my favorite Kerouac piece.
I'm not familiar with it, so it's, yeah, sure. That's one.
That was Hubert Selby.
Okay. I think you meant A Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
Is that Dr. Seuss? Who's that? Shel Silverstein?
I'm pretty sure it's Shel Silverstein.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure that you meant to say Angela's Ashes. I'm pretty sure that you meant to say Echo Park.
It's Congo.
Yeah.
By Michael Crichton. That's my favorite of the Beat poems.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Have you
heard... that was the best one.
Have you heard of this thing called On the Broad?
No, I haven't.
It's one of these mashups. You know how everybody's doing the mashups, you know, like the Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter and, you know, the Old Man and the Sea Monster, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, stuff like that. Well, this guy wrote a mashup of On the Road, and then like he's making it so that, Sal Paradise and Dean Moriarty are like bros, and like
right, like fat dudes.
Yeah, yeah, they go from place to place, like chugging tequila and like scoring chicks and stuff like this. It seems pretty funny,
and that's pretty legit too. Like, that's not that far off from the actual content of the story. I mean, it's a couple of dudes who are probably too good looking for their own good, driving around and just working on everything that moves, basically.
Yeah.
Just going from coast to coast, working up these girls, drinking everything they can find, smoking what they can. It's bizarre. Yeah, so that's not far off at all. It might as well just be the same book. You could probably just give it the different title and switch the years of the cars, and then you're set.
Pretty much.
Yeah, instead of like getting pie and ice cream, they get like McDonald's or something.
And they drink a lot of Muscle Milk.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And now, it's time
for the lightning round.
British ministers are preparing a major expansion of the government's powers to monitor the email exchanges and website visits of every person in the UK. According to new legislation that's expected in next month's Queen's speech, internet companies will be instructed to install hardware enabling GCHQ, the government's electronic listening agency, to examine on demand any phone call made, text message and email sent, and website accessed in real time. And I know we're both pretty paranoid folks, so let the far-reaching speculations begin.
Well, this is fine. I'm fine with this. If the British government wants to oppress their people, go for it. I'm against, of course, American government oppressing the American people. But if the British want to do it, by all means, have at it. The British deserve to be oppressed.
How much different is this from something like the Patriot Act? I mean, the roving wiretaps and everything. Like, I don't know. I guess you just have to choose which one's better. Whether your government's really explicit about the fact that they're just going to trace how long you've been on the phone, or they pass legislation that basically says, you know, we're going to listen to these different phone calls throughout the day. Just don't worry about it. I mean, it's for your own good, because some of these people are terrorists. Blanket statement, you know.
It's just something we have to do. I mean, I wonder if this even, like, catches anybody doing anything. I would have to think that it doesn't. Because if you have so many people in England, like, however many millions of people it is, like, you would have to, like, randomly stumble upon, like, you know, like, it would probably be, like, so amazing. Like, the odds are so slim that you would randomly stumble, you know, like, if you're like, all right, I'm going to listen to 3 minutes of a phone call and then switch to another random number, and then 3 minutes of that one and switch to another random number or whatever it is. Like, the odds would be so tiny that you would, like, switch to somebody talking about what they're going to cook, you know, somebody telling their mom what they're about to eat, to, yeah, I'm going to blow up Parliament and that big weird Ferris wheel in the middle of London. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to do. Like, I don't know, I just can't imagine stuff like this, like, working for any reason to save lives or
catch. Yeah, I don't get it. Yeah, it's just perverse, I think. And that's the thing, is, like, this stuff, government action like this, well, government action in general, I tend to just kind of ignore. Like, I genuinely don't care that much. But when something, like, always kind of hits a chord about, like, 1984 or something of that nature, just that surveillance thing, it just fascinates me. I think it's really interesting that they're going through such lengths, like you said, just to listen to these little blurbs of conversation that probably don't amount to anything. I mean, how many of these are going to be, like, just teenagers talking on the phone with each other?
Probably all of them.
Probably all of them.
Teenagers are the only people who use the phone.
And the text messaging, like, maybe they're just hoping that many of them are sex messages. Again, like, I just think it's all kind of a perverse action. They're not really looking for detailed information about terrorist activity. They just want to see, like, who's bumping uglies with anybody else.
Yeah. And, like, I really can't understand this stuff now, because it's like, you know, between people just volunteering to put everything in their lives, like, on the internet, and, like, Apple, you know, accommodating it in apps and stuff like this, like, everything is on the internet. Like, if you want to be, like, if I was like, oh man, I wonder what John Holmes, guest of the show and friend of ours, John Holmes, I wonder what he's up to right now. Like, I could just go to his Twitter and follow his Foursquare, follow where he's checked in on Facebook, and, like, I would know everything about him, who he's with, what he's doing, who he's talking to. Like, people are just volunteering all this crap. I don't understand why the government thinks that they need to, you know, search harder. Like, it's so easy to find everything a person is doing right now. What the government should do is keep tabs on anybody who doesn't have a Foursquare account, because they're clearly hiding something.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are, like, people that are doing something. All the normal people on Earth who have, you know, location enabled on their Twitter feeds, like, they're fine. They're not doing anything.
It's probably like people, when you mention that, like, the people who are a suspect, it just reminded me of last week's story about the hipster with the pink shirt who said he was an easy target.
Yeah,
I bet he does not have a Foursquare account. Mm-mm. And he probably carries a typewriter around. That guy might have been Chase. I don't know.
Yeah, he carries around his rotary phone.
Yeah, hold on. I need to find a phone wire and make a call.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next story that we have is that a woman was arrested in a prostitution sting, but not before she got two double cheeseburgers off the dollar menu at McDonald's. Christine Faith Baker, 47, was walking on Southwest Florida Street last Friday when she was approached by a detective working in the Manatee County Sheriff's Office. After the undercover detective invited Baker into his car and the talk turned to sex, she said her fee would be 2 double cheeseburgers from the dollar menu at McDonald's. And that's according to the report. The detective bought the hamburgers for $2.75, and then Baker told him that he could also tip her $40 for her services, according, again, to the report. After Baker gave the detective directions to a vacant lot, Baker was arrested by other agents and charged with prostitution. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, what would you do for 2 McDonald's cheeseburgers off the dollar menu?
Well, it depends. If it's your average run-of-the-mill McDonald's, not a whole lot. But if it's the McDonald's that's somewhere between Miamisburg and Kings Island in Ohio, I would do a lot because that's the best McDonald's ever. Man, it's so good. The fries, always so fresh and warm. But I guess that wouldn't come into play during this. I don't understand why this broad even put the hamburgers into the equation, because I bet that if you say, hey, I'll have sex with you for free, but you can tip me $40 if you want, like, you would probably get away with it because you're not doing it. You're just doing it for the donation, like sort of how, like, when bands have like all ages shows, you know, they say, oh, it's free to get in, but, you know, there's like a $5 donation, wink, that would, you know, get in trouble with cops or whatever that happened to be rolling by.
Yeah.
I would think.
Yeah, yeah.
I would think that you'd be able to get away with it.
Right. I mean, if you're going to do it for next to nothing, and let's face it, the value menu in as much as you pay and for the quality that you get is next to nothing, then why not just accept the $40 tip outright?
Yeah. Or, I mean, why not? I don't understand. Like, how bad of self-esteem do you have to be? Like, how? You must realize that you're terrible at being a hooker and you're no good at sex if you're bartering for McDonald's fries. Like, you would think that you'd be like, hey, I'll have sex with you for money, but first you got to bring me like some of that great cheese bread and like some fish from that Red Lobster over there. That would be great. You know, like.
Right. Or I like the bartering idea, because you can say like, I'll have sex with you for 3 plump calves and some grain for the next growing season.
Winter is coming, after all.
Indeed. And I like that it is so close just to having nothing, where I'm pretty sure, like, this report could have also stated, I'll have sex with you for a thumbs up or a smile, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
What can you do for free? A round of applause.
Yeah, and I mean, this joke is hacky that I'm about to make. Forewarning on that.
Do it. Make the hacky joke. Bad joke. Bad joke.
But I mean, if you're going to say, hey, I'll have sex with you for 2 McDonald's hamburgers, and then you get arrested, like, all my ex-girlfriends should be arrested, because I'm always taking them out to like expensive 3D movies and shit like this. That's way more than the $2 for the hamburgers.
Excellent. I'm glad you committed.
I mean, this is hacky to talk about, and I'm sure a million stand-up comedians at open mics have the same exact spiel. But
yep.
Why is it illegal to say, hey, buy me some hamburgers and I'll have sex with you? But it's perfectly legal to say, hey, I'll go out on a date with you. Yeah. And then have sex with somebody after they've bought you food or taken you out to a movie.
Well, I mean, obviously, it's a case of it depends. Like, if it's a committed relationship or something.
Oh, it doesn't depend.
I think it does.
I don't think that it does. Under penalty of violence.
You're going to hit me over Skype. You're going to hit me over the interweb.
No, I'm talking about, you know, you take a girl out to see Iron Man. She doesn't want to have sex with you. Yada, yada, yada. Punches.
As a result of not having sex with you for seeing Iron Man.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah, Iron Man was pretty good.
If you take
and movies are not cheap, but I don't think they equate to fisticuffs.
I don't know. If you take a girl to see a Robert Downey Jr. movie and she doesn't have sex with you, there's something wrong with her.
that's all you have to take away from it. You don't have to bring punches and kicks into this. But yeah.
I didn't say anything about kicks.
Well, I mean...
Violence.
You didn't, but...
Oh, now I'm looking right into your psyche. Your dark soul.
You gotta use all those limbs, man.
It's like a Rorschach test.
Basically. I mentioned
punching a girl.
I see legs. I also see my parents. This is bizarre. I know where you're coming from, and you're right. It's been said so many times. I think that's why I'm kind of turned off to the idea, or really turned off to the idea. As I just don't think anything is owed in that regard. I mean, this guy was explicit. Well, I can't really approach this from any direction. I was going to say this guy was explicitly looking for sex when he picked up this woman and was willing to like put forward the money for food. But that's exactly what you're trying to say too. Like, you were explicitly looking for sex with a woman and you're willing to put forth food.
Yeah. An Iron Man.
See, that's my point. It's like, I know it's sappy, but there's some dudes out there who don't, you're not explicitly looking for sex. Like, it's the icing on the cake. Like, it might be a first date and that girl sees Robert Downey Jr. on screen and gets all hot and bothered and invites him up for coffee and whatnot. Like, that's not always the case, but the guy's probably feeling pretty unexpected. Like, it's an unexpected thing.
No, I don't know. I think the only guy on earth that fits the mold that you're describing is Ted Mosby from How I Met Your Mother.
Really?
Yeah. Or that creepy dude from the Last American Virgin movie.
If it's not prostitution, then I don't think there's any expectation of sex that needs to be had. Like, obviously, if it is prostitution, you're expecting sex. You're not expecting, like, watch a movie and then be excused from the room.
Well, I'm not saying that you would be expecting sex. But, I mean, I think as a general rule, if you go out on a date with a girl, you want to have sex with her. There's no guy that's just like, oh, yeah, I'm just going out on this date for fun. If it ends in sex, I'll be very disappointed.
That's my point. It's like, no guy's going to be disappointed, but I don't think any guy's going to deserve sex just for going on a date.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not saying that.
All right, so let's get on to the next one then, because this is hilarious. In Moorhead, Minnesota, a waitress is suing after $12,000 was left at her restaurant table. She says it was a tip, but police say it's drug money, according to the forum. So this, according to this waitress's report, she said that she found a box at a table that she was waiting at, and the patron had left. She opened the box. She found rolls of cash inside totaling $12,000. She followed the person outside, says that she tried to get the woman to take back the box, and the woman denied it, saying for her to keep the money. She decided to call the police about this cash, reporting the money, and the officers told her to wait 90 days in case someone claimed the money. Now, the forum reports that after 3 months, police told the woman that the cash was being held as drug money. What's hilarious is that there's no details about whether they were correct in this assumption or not. It doesn't give any details about what drugs they think were bought, according to this trade-off. Which, you know, I mean, it's up in the air. But as far as the story reports, there's no details leading one way or the other. So it just sounds like the police are holding this exorbitant amount of cash, this $12,000, and just stamping it with the label drug money because they couldn't figure out how else to, like, retain it.
Yeah. Yeah, this is... Everything about this is absurd. I'm mad at every single person in this story. I'm mad at...
It's agitating, isn't it?
Yeah, the whole thing is agitating. Firstly, I'm mad at anybody who would leave a $12,000 tip. So I'm mad at that person. I'm mad at the waitress for calling the police. You get a $12,000 tip that's going to change your life. Like, that's more than you make in a year or something, I'm sure. And you call the police and be like, hey, I think you guys need to listen to this. I have $12,000 here for you, police. Come take it. You're just a stupid. And then I'm mad, of course, at the police because, the police, they often do these things where they take down a drug cartel and then they sell off all their cars and they use that money to buy new uniforms or whatever. But, I mean, even if this was drug money, Like, it's okay for the cops and the police and the government to take drug money and use it for themselves, but a waitress who needs the money, they're not allowed.
Yeah, that's the weirdest part is, in what way is it drug money? I mean, is the waitress being paid off or something? And I just want more explanation about this. I've not seen it, though. I mean, if any listeners who live, like, in Minnesota have heard about this story, have been to the Frying Pan restaurant in Moorhead where this happened, or, like, are in Clay County, I would love to just know more about this story. Because it just leaves it at that, where you're just kind of left with these open threads. Like, who's lying and who's telling the truth? Oh, it's excruciating. This is going to keep me up for nights.
It's like the end of Total Recall. Was he dreaming? Or was it real? This is, like, even if it was drug money, the moment that the people doing the drug deals give away their $12,000, it's no longer drug money. Like, I'm sure 75% of the money in circulation now has come through nefarious means, whether it be, you know, it was part of a drug deal once, or it was from a guy being like...
Who bought hamburgers for sex.
Yeah, or a guy who bought hamburgers for sex, or a guy who said, yeah, we'll give you this loan on this house that we know you can't afford, or whatever it is. Like, all money is drug money. Like, I mean, in theory, you know, like, you can't hold it against this lady. Like, once it's out of the actual culprit's hands, like, it no longer remains drug money. You might as well just seize all the money in the world.
That's the other thing. Like, why is it stamped with that label? It irks me. This is, I don't know. It's going to be a long night of me just trying to research more about the story. I might make some phone calls.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure this $12,000 now has gone to the Buying the Cops' Wives Earrings Fund.
That's a great fund. Helps a lot of needy kids.
Yeah, if you're a cop's wife, it helps out.
Yeah, if you're married to a kid who has pierced ears. Next up on the lightning round, last up on the lightning round, is in Destrehan, Louisiana. Probably pronounced that wrong. But a 24-year-old is dead after horseplay reenacting WrestleMania got out of control. Stephen A. Arsenault, III of Destrehan, was pronounced dead at St. Charles Parish Hospital at 10:39 p.m. after reenacting some World Wrestling Entertainment's WrestleMania 28 moves with his 14-year-old cousin. How many times have you, like, recreated, or did you ever recreate wrestling moves with friends or your younger brother?
Millions of times.
Millions of times?
Wrestling all the time. Man, back in the olden days, man, me and Jono, we'd be powerbombing each other through cardboard boxes. Just the most hardcore of things that you can imagine. In fact, Jono once, when he was in, I don't know what it's called. He was like in this halfway house of some sort. He got a pedigree through a folding table. Through like one of the actual lunch tables that they use in wrestling.
That's incredible.
I didn't see it, but I heard about it. It was the most hardcore thing I ever heard of in my entire life. There's a lot of wrestling going on in the late 90s.
What's interesting about this instance, I mean, not only did like somebody end up dead from it, which is terrible, but the fact that it's not like a backyard wrestling event or anything like that. I mean, remember when backyard wrestling was actually a thing? Go ahead.
I remember like it was yesterday.
Here's where we'd actually have a dream sequence where Parker remembers it like it was yesterday, and we'd hear like the entire environment of ICP trying to wrestle in the backyard or something. Because they were huge proponents of backyard wrestling. But besides the point, it was just such a big thing. And I'm sure there were deaths in that instance, but this is something way past that. I mean, it's been years since like I've heard of any backyard wrestling event being of any interest or note. Like, I'm not really even sure who still watches WrestleMania. And this one in particular, like, I mean, I would assume it's kind of dull at this point. Would that not be correct, or what do you think?
Well, I watched it, it was pretty dull. The parts that I saw were pretty lame. Undertaker match was sweet.
It was lame enough for these kids to try and reenact it. Well, I mean, no. I mean, these kids were obviously, like, excited about it.
Yeah.
That's why they were reenacting it.
Yeah, these kids were super into it. What I find, I mean, this all sounds reasonable to me. Well, for one, if you're 24 and your 14-year-old cousin chokes you out,
like, to death,
you're a little bitch. That's Darwinism. Like, I mean, if you can't get out of a chokehold from a 14-year-old son, like, your time is up. Your time.
Or at least admit, you know, like, you know, save yourself. Get out of that thing. Yeah. Tap out.
Tap out, for God's sake, man. There's no shame in tapping out.
You don't have, like, a crowd of millions watching you portray a fake sport. This isn't the Olympics. You're not at WrestleMania.
Yeah, and, I mean, this is one of those things where, I mean, although they were watching wrestling, granted, like, the rear naked chokehold is an MMA move, and I don't understand why, you know, it's always, they always go to the wrestling when this stuff happens. Even if it is, you know, an MMA move that kills somebody. I mean, nobody, like, Samoa Joe is the only person on earth in wrestling that's doing a rear naked chokehold, and he sucks. No one would want to emulate him. He's terrible. And I don't know, like, wrestling just gets a bad rap. Anytime anything like this happens, they just go immediately to wrestling, when I'm sure these kids, this 14-year-old, saw a lot more rear naked chokeholds in the MMA than in wrestling. But they just happen to be watching wrestling, so.
It's a weird convergence, because he's using this, I didn't even know it was an MMA move, to be honest, but I'll take your word for it. And they're doing it on an inflatable mattress that would probably look more like a professional wrestling ring than it would try to be recreating, like, what is it, an octagon? Like a chained in... I don't know how these things work. What do they do with mixed martial arts? Is it an octagon?
Yeah.
Like that tap-out thing?
Yeah.
I would assume that they were trying to recreate both, I guess. So it's a weird mix. But it's weird they're doing it at all. Like, how much... Not just on the 24-year-old's part for not, like, saying, hey, stop it. But why didn't the 14-year-old stop? Like, why was he so committed to choking out his cousin?
Well, that guy didn't tap. I mean, you know, you got to keep with it until they tap. The guy should have tapped. But even beyond these two, because, I mean, sometimes you get locked into some wrestling and you hurt somebody. You know, sometimes you got the mandible claw on one of your friends and it really hurts them. That's what I used to do. You see, back in high school, I would just apply the mandible claw to just anybody and everybody, and it was just a fun time.
Yeah, that's a really interesting move.
It's the best move.
Yeah,
and it's easy for a slouch like me to apply. But I mean, if this was a WrestleMania party, like, no doubt there's more than just these two people. So there's probably a whole room of people, like, applauding. You know, being like, "You got to tap out," you know, like, "Choke him out," blah, "You get him." And those are the real villains here. Like, I can imagine getting so into some fake wrestling that you either kill... Well, I guess I could see this happening. Like, you just being into wrestling and not having retard strength and just killing somebody, or being into it and not tapping out. But the people watching, they should have really been like, hey, this man is about to die. Why are we watching this? Like, let's
start. Yeah, once he starts turning blue, like, that's... And I guess the witness reports say, like, yeah, he started turning blue. It's like, well, why didn't you do anything?
Yeah.
Because they were into it. He didn't tap out yet.
Yeah.
Nobody bothered to lift the hand, which is what you always have to do.
Yeah, there had to have been more than just the two people there. There had to have been, like, a whole bunch of people just watching this man die slowly and cheering it on.
Terrible. And not one referee to, like, at least check the hand. Thing again, like, I'm expecting either a Hulk Hogan like resurgence where Hulkamania kicks in, or it falls and you call the match and that's it.
Yeah, I was actually commenting on that last night, or two nights ago, or whatever, whenever me and my wife were watching WrestleMania, is that, like, they did that, like, during the Rock and John Cena match, like, where, like, the Rock seemed out and the referee lifted his hand, you know, the hand falls, he lifted it again and it fell again, and then, you know, it was going to be the third count, you know. So, like, he lifted his hand and it fell, but it didn't fall all the way. And now he's hawking out. The Rock's hawking out. And that seems super antiquated now. Like, it's like a real old school thing. Like, that doesn't happen too much these days. Like, it's a real old school wrestling move to do that. And it seems even more antiquated now that we have the MMA, where, like, the moment it seems, like, the millisecond, it seems like a guy is no longer conscious, you break it up and stop the match. Like, so, I mean, if you're, like, trying to project the illusion that, you know, this is a real sporting event, you know, this wrestling. Like, if the referee saw, oh man, The Rock looks like he's unconscious, I better lift his hand three times to make sure. Like, The Rock would already have brain damage.
Yeah.
Like, The Hulk would probably be dead Which maybe is what happened here. Maybe they did the hand lifty thing for 3 seconds, and in that 3 seconds, the guy died.
And that's the only thing that we can really fault watching wrestling for, like giving the wrong impression that if you just lift the hand 3 times, that's going to give you an accurate depiction of how conscious someone is. If he lifts his hand up by this last time, that means he's still in it to win it. Not so. I mean, you're probably just, yeah, those brain cells are already gone. They're done.
Yeah. What I like about this, though, is in the comments section, to wrap this episode up nicely, the very top comments are about whether or not the guy who died was an Obama voter.
Yeah, one less Obama vote. Huzzah. Yeah, I don't know how that... I don't even know where that comes from. But yeah, you brought it full circle. Like, that's exactly the kind of comment I would expect to see if somebody posted this on Facebook.
Yeah. This is how political discourse works in this country.
Totally asinine.
Got mail.
This week, we do have mail from listener and good friend Blake. Blake actually contributes to our discussion about what we listened to during our teenage years. And if anyone out there wants to share it with us, we'll be happy to give the details on our website, which we'll do with this one. But to give you a rundown, his starts in 1992 at age 13. He had And Justice for All from Metallica. 1993 at age 14, he was listening to Chaos AD. At age 15, he was listening to Nine Inch Nails, The Downward Spiral. And at age 16, he was listening to Portrait of an American Family from Marilyn Manson.
Yeah, it's a sweet one.
Followed by, at age 17, Marilyn Manson's Antichrist Superstar. And I know we were discussing a lot of albums that we were listening to. I never got into Marilyn Manson. It was just that kind of pervasive thing where he was everywhere around that time. And it's hard to forget like how prevalent he was like in the late 90s, like 97 and such.
Yeah, I was pretty into Manson. I found him to be very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Still do.
And so did Blake. And at age 18, he started turning away from that and getting into more house music. Or as he says, he started to get into like his DJ phase, starting off with industrial acts, particularly KMFDM, the album Symbols. And we'll post up some of the details on our website. And again, if anybody else wants to contribute to that discussion or any discussions that we have on the show, feel free to email us. We'll read your emails on the Frisbee Got Mail segment. We can be reached at poolpartyradio@gmail.com.
Indeed. Yeah. Blake Sell's email was super long, so we'll just post it rather than reading it all. And then, yeah, so you can either email us if you want to contribute your albums, or you can leave it as a comment on this aforementioned Blake Sell post that we're going to put on poolpartyradio.com.
And thanks, Blake, for sending the email, too. That was awesome.
Indeed. And that's the end of the show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Go to our website, poolpartyradio.com. Email us, please, at poolpartyradio@gmail.com. We will read them. We will respond to them. We'll get a dialogue going. We'll be friends forever. Speaking of friends forever, go to facebook.com/poolpartyradio and like us there. We got all kinds of stuff popping. Most importantly, go to iTunes. Our iTunes. Search for us there. Search for Pool Party Radio on the iTunes. We'll pop up. You can give us like a nice 5-star rating. You can leave us a nice comment or a review. That would really help out the show. Other people will find us that way. You know, if you write something like, oh man, I love the Pool Party Radio. Somebody just searching, browsing aimlessly through podcasts will be like, oh, well, you know, this son of a bitch likes Pool Party Radio. I think maybe I'll like it too. And that will really help us. That's one of the biggest ways that people find the podcasts, is not only through iTunes, but just sort of randomly browsing. So that would be a big help. You can also subscribe to the show, which will help you. And Jesus helps only those that help themselves. So you subscribe to our podcast and good things will happen. Go to the Red Band Network, just redbandnetwork.com, and check out the other shows. Check out Pod Awful and Ear Candy and Greenlight Show. They're very funny. As well as Junk Food Dinner, our big 2-year celebration of talking about pop, cult, movies, popular cult movies.
I like pop cult movies too.
Yeah, yeah. I now cannot say cult without saying pop in front of it, thanks to Jeremy Morrison. But yeah, our big 2-year anniversary is reaching its end, and we begin our third year. We just did a full length audio commentary for the Warriors, which will be out by the time this is up. So enjoy that if you like the Warriors, and if you like Ajax, because he's the best one.
He is the best one. And he gets caught by the cops. Spoiler alert.
Killer.
Doesn't mean you shouldn't watch the rest of it, because there's so much good stuff about that movie.
So good. Such a good movie. But yeah, so until next week, this is Parker for Jason saying, fuck you, Chelios.
On the right is a silverback gorilla. And when we went through there, we were expecting it to be like hiding in the trees or something because there was a lot of trees. But no, it was like sitting on its bum, legs extended, upright, like in the most plain spot in front of the walkway. And we're like, whoa, shit. And it's just sitting there like looking up at us, just like deadpan. It was pretty awesome. It had very human eyes. Just kind of looking at us, and then like look coyly away, and then kind of look back at us, like as if it was embarrassed that we were staring at it.
He was a little shy.
And he's like, "What? Why are you looking at me? I'm just sitting in plain sight. What's so special about this?" It was very funny. He looked like he. I mean, it would have been funnier if he had a small table with a dinner and like a napkin tied around his neck, and like a candlelight, and you know, he's like, "I'm trying to eat here, please. Stop staring at me."
How rude.
Just kept looking away.
I can't believe it.
He sounds like George Takei.
Yeah. Oh my.
Oh my. What tourists.